listener. It's Zach Harper, Amin Alhassan, and Anthony Mays of Cinephobe. You may be asking yourself, what is Cinephobe? Amin, would you like to fill in the people?
Cinephobe is the podcast where Zach and I watch movies that are poorly rated on Rotten Tomatoes and try to ascertain.
Ascertain?
Yes.
Okay. Ascertain.
Whether or not they're accurately poorly rated, or maybe they didn't get a fair shake. Cinephobe, produced by this guy, Anthony Mays.
Hey, that's me. I produced this show. I also watch the movies, even though that wasn't included in the description, and I also ascertain. This month is...
Whoa!
Oh, Maze, why'd you say that? Supercharge it. So that this promo can remain evergreen.
I feel like explaining a little bit more.
In 60 seconds?
I don't know. Maybe I don't bring attention to it. Assuring people like, look, if you listen, you're going to get it. Just give it time.
That's a good promo. Just listen to it.
Give it time.
You'll figure it out.
Is this the promo right now?
Isn't it?
Okay, I think we got it.
Cinephobe.
Wherever you get podcasts.
Coming to you live from the Starburn Studio in Burbank, California, it's Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone, your comedy field guide to life. Tonight, hello, environment. Am I your friend? Are these biodegradable doggy bags eco-friendly, or am I just tossing Mother Earth an everlasting bag of dog shit? Attorney Justin Arisman, professor of environmental law at the University of Southern California, guides us through the minefield of what is environmentally friendly and what makes our habitat unfriend us. Plus, Tony Anita Hull shares listener descriptions of the show, and we've moved. We'll tell you all about our new digs at Starburn Studios. Same show, different discarded mattresses. I'm Adam Felber, the man who makes sure our conversations end up in the correct topical recycling bin. And now, please welcome the woman who faithfully keeps every environment free of wasteful excess, except for the conversations on this show, Paula Poundstone!
Thank you so much.
All right. We are in a new studio. So crazy this is happening.
We're in a new studio. Everyone said to me, it's 10 minutes from Ray Horseman. It's 10 minutes from Ray Horseman. It is not 10 minutes from Ray Horseman. I've been driving and driving and driving. We had to leave Ray Horseman because we broke the door.
We did break the door.
With the big boat, with the keel boat from
Lewis.
Well,
you brought
Lewis
and Clark's keel boat last week. And
maybe that was a
For the sake of argument, that was the final straw.
I guess that was it for us. So we had to come here to Starburns. And I have to confess, everyone kept saying to me, why don't you go check it out? Why don't you go see what it looks like? And I said, well, because it's a long drive from Santa Monica. That's why I don't. And so Captain Crinkle Bonnie Burns talked me into coming the other day.
Right.
And she was so excited to show me, I don't know if it was a lounge or someone's office or if it's even part of this building. I don't know. But there was a room that she took me into. Have you seen it? It has like...
Bonnie, I don't follow Bonnie into any room ever.
It has like brown...
Bonnie's got... There's a misery vibe there going on. It's worse than Winnie Feynman. I can't do it.
It has like brown, I don't know, vinyl-y... What is that? There was a
leather?
Word. Leather? Yeah, but it's not leather.
Vinyl?
Something like that.
It's, pleather?
Okay, pleather or something like that. It looks like a den that a rich guy invites his potential son-in-law into. To grill him about marrying his daughter.
Are you talking about the room over there that has the bar and everything?
Yeah.
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 It's cool. It's like a lounge.
Yeah. It's not cool. There's something about it.
I can't believe we're in a new space. We've got new hosts, and you're bitching about some lounge you don't
I'm
like.
No, I'm really happy to have everything's good, but that was just, having heard you guys describe it, it's going to,
and it's like then a rec I went room.
It's not a rec room. It's a room for the wrecked. It's a room that you get wrecked in.
Definitely. I saw a bar with a big old bottle of Maker's Mark that has my name on it, as far as I'm concerned.
There's something. And then the drive over here. From Santa Monica, I went into Nevada. Was I supposed
See,
to?
See, that's, do you think I think, the problem. Because Nevada should never enter into the equation.
I went east.
Right.
That was correct, wasn't it? I went east from Santa Monica. Yeah, Santa Monica, I'm on the water.
Once you got to Nevada, you've gone too far.
Yeah.
Yeah,
well,
for
that's
sure.
what they told me, because I pulled over. As soon as I crossed into Nevada, I pulled over and asked directions.
Maybe you'll do better next week.
I said, can you tell me where Starburns Studios is at? Is that what it's called, Starburn Studios?
More or less,
yeah. I said, can you tell me where Starburn Studio is? And they said, it's like 10 minutes from Ray Horseman Studios.
It is.
No, they said...
it's really about 10 minutes.
Yeah, no, they said, you mean that place with that kind of odd room that everybody thinks is so cool with the pleather.
Is that really what happened?
The room from, I think it was in MAME.
In MAME?
I think that room was in MAME.
I think it was in The Graduate.
It might have been in The Graduate. Yeah,
I think that's where
exactly
Mr. Robinson pours a drink.
That's exactly
for
right.
Hoffman.
Yeah,
it's
that's
that
exactly
room.
Right. That's exactly the vibe. Yeah.
Now we got the whole crew here. We've got Tony Anita Hall. We've got Bonnie Burns right here on bass.
We have
returning
Captain
champion
Crinkle.
Daniel Grimsland.
Thanks for being here, Daniel.
Welcome,
sounds
Daniel.
Great already. And then we have some new people.
Through the glass over here, we've okay. got Land Romo. He's one of our producers. He's here at Starburns. And we've got Jessica Gutierrez.
Oh, man. Good arm roll there.
Thank you very much.
But the way this is a different. Okay.
Yeah.
The other studio, Ray Horseman Studios, we're all in the room together. But in this one, these guys are like newborn babies. They're on the other side of a glass thing.
Yeah. I think we're newborn babies to them.
No, they're the newborn babies.
We're in the well-lit chamber.
No,
that's
they're
with climate control.
They're newborn babies with vision problems.
Aren't they cute?
So they have to keep it dark in there.
For them. I see.
Their clocks are already off.
Their eyes are dilated.
You know what I did do? To sort of warm the place, to make the place homey, make it ours. Is I brought my snake plant.
You did.
I did. I brought my snake.
Well, you brought something else too.
I did bring something else. For our auction tonight, we're having another auction.
Last week we had an auction that actually ended our tenure at Ray Horseman Studios. And by the way, it is kind of a fond goodbye to Miranda Street. We're going to have to discover this new neighborhood, but Roger Federer's store is going to have to continue on without us.
Fortunately, it's only 10 minutes away, so I can swing
so
by
So you could
there.
Be there in an hour and a half.
And keep in mind, the people who are interested in the 100 Caller Contest, I want you to know
unfortunately, it's over.
No, it is not over.
Oh, okay.
The 100 Caller Contest is continuing, and you continue to be able to receive the 100th caller receives any appliance you want from Roger Federer's appliance store over on Miranda Street. And also, you get to hang out with Adam Felber after the game.
Which you don't.
You do. And so that's good. But okay. I did bring for an auction, I decided to bring a smaller item because we did get thrown out of the other place because I brought that keel boat and it broke the door.
What have you got for us tonight for our online auction?
Here it is, this papier-mâché head from the Alcatraz escape.
It's a very nice-looking head.
On June 11, 1962, Frank Morris, as well as John and Clarence Anglin, all three bank robbers, by the way,
yeah,
escaped.
From Alcatraz.
From Alcatraz.
As commemorated in the movie Escape from Alcatraz.
Yeah, I think there's more than one Alcatraz escape movie.
Okay.
Yeah, but they all get away. Anyways, the brothers, I think, were the ones who made the heads from a homemade cement powder mixture that included soap and toilet paper. I believe they made four heads. And,
now, did they make them in, like, shop class at the prison, or did they make them in their spare time under the...
No, they made them in their spare time, but they did use paint from the prison art kits.
Okay.
A Caucasian,
this is a fairly realistic-looking papier-mâché head.
It's an amazing papier-mâché head, given the stress under which they had to create it.
Yeah.
You know.
Now, these the genuine ones from The Escape or from one of the Escape from Alcatraz movies?
No, this is an original...
Because it looks recent.
No, it was used June 11, 1962. What they did, you guys,
that's
was...
That's some long-lived papier-mâché right there, Paula.
Yeah. Well, I've kept it in good condition since I've had it. I keep it sealed. Sealed.
Sealed.
While they were escaping, and they, dug a tunnel, I think it was under the sink, and they had some sheets hung over the drain pipes so that the guards couldn't see. But
if I was a prison guard, whenever anybody hung a sheet or a poster, I'd be like, I've seen Shawshank Redemption.
You know, I kind of feel that I think that prison security was naive back then. I think, they were a step away from using the honor system, really, because the guards would walk by at regular intervals.
Sure.
And they would, shine the flashlight or whatever to make sure that the inmate was asleep. And so what these guys did was they put these papier-mâché heads on their pillows and, made, sheets or whatever for the body. And this passed for—it made the guard think that the prisoner was— sleeping there, and they were able then to escape.
Yeah.
So these are
a piece of history, Paul. Yeah, a piece of history.
It's exactly what I have for you. Is a piece of not for you because you're it is an online auction. Well, you know, last week we had a variety of bidders, and and you bid on the head.
Okay, so if you want to bid on the head,
oh look, we already got a bid. Look at that!
Did.
Oh my gosh,
that's surprising.
Once again, it's our benefactor, Scott Franciscus.
It is, Scott Franciscus.
$25 for this priceless paper mache head.
Scott Franciscus, thank you for bidding.
Three bank robbers who wanted nothing more than to stroll down the streets of San Francisco to do just that. It's a freedom head. That's what it is.
It's a freedom head.
And does Scott have it for $25? He has lots of soap. He can make his own.
He doesn't have lots of soap. He has one bar that we sent.
Well, that's plenty. He can make a teeny little head.
Yeah, it's a bar of hotel soap. It would be a very small. It would be a shrunken head.
He can make a Lilliputian head.
A Lilliputian head, indeed. Speaking of Lilliputian, do you have a word for us, Paula Poundstone?
I do have a word, Adam, and it is...
Our first word at Starburns Studios in Burbank, California,
Oh, man. You're like a new dad.
I'm so excited. You know, I like
just,
this place.
You know, it's my kid's first day at kindergarten.
You just
take
don't
a
care as long
there.
As there's a microphone and something to bitch about.
It's my kid's first day of having a snack. Take a picture of that. Oh, this is going to fascinate everybody.
Have you seen these little bottles of water we get here?
I did. They're teeny. They're Lilliputian bottles of water.
Okay.
I have a word, Adam. It's a plum.
A plum.
It's a noun that means calm and or self-confident. Here, I'll use it in a sentence. I have never in my entire life, even for a second, had a plum. But I am certainly happy for those who do.
I would say that's true.
Yeah.
You have so many good qualities, but a plum.
I don't have a plum.
Elan, grace.
Now I notice you're saying a plum.
I've just always said it that way.
Yeah. Well, that would be UMB. This is OMB.
A plum. So you say
more
it like bomb?
So, all right, so if there's a loud explosion, you look around and see if a bum went off?
A bum?
Exactly.
No, I don't.
Whoa.
I just always said a plum.
Yeah, I think it's a plum.
Okay.
It's a noun that means self-confident. I think I'm right on the edge of success in remembering these vocabulary words as a result of creating a vocabulary song each week.
Yeah.
That goes something like... this. Let's see. Here we go.
You learned how to play that on your clock.
This word is a plum. It's a noun that means calm, self-confidence. Will I ever have that? Not a chance. Last week word was vituperative. It's an adjective that means bitter and abusive. What a shitty life you live. Ooh, that would be vituperative.
Yes, it would.
The week before that, the word was Lilliputian. It's an adjective that means very small or unimportant. Also, it's a noun that means very small or unimportant person or thing. Going back before that, we had prandial.
Yes,
it's an adjective that means of or relating to a meal. I don't like the mashed potatoes with the peel. That would be a prandial conversation.
I like that you have internal rhymes but no external ones.
And not long ago, the word was myrmidon. It's a noun that means follower or subordinate of a powerful person, especially one who's willing to engage in dishonest activities. Who could that be? Beats me.
Beats me.
Let's never forget gallimafree. It's a noun that means confused jumble or medley of things. Hodgepodge, who's podge, hodgepodge. Adam doesn't think my song is replicable.
Replicable.
Replicable. Woo!
But I do.
Oh, boy.
I do. Okay, Paula Poundstone. Again, the replicable parts of those songs are the ones that don't help you remember the definitions of the words.
Hodgepodge, who's podge?
Exactly.
Gallimafree.
Well, well done.
There you go. How would I remember
I have
without
some news.
My song?
I want to break out some news. You're not going to like, you're going to love this.
Prandial.
And then you're going
to
not like it.
Of relating to a meal.
Yes, that's what prandial means.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't like the mashed potatoes with the peel. That would be a prandial conversation.
Yeah, okay. So you're starting to remember a song that you've written. Okay, so yeah. maybe I've been wrong about this the whole time.
What?
Tony Anita Hull loves this song.
It's a great song.
She told me
why.
Before she loves it, and then she told me why. And you're going to hate this.
I am.
She said, it's because I love the song Lullaby of Broadway.
See, here's the thing. You won't believe me.
Stolen it, Paula.
No,
You've stolen it.
Maybe great minds think alike, but I don't know the song, The Lullaby of Broadway, and I don't want to listen to it now because I don't want to be influenced by it.
You couldn't possibly be more influenced. Although I will say this, The Lullaby of Broadway had other melodic parts to it, too.
Precisely. It's not the same.
No.
You know, you're a little obdurate on this subject, Adam.
I am?
You are.
Why? I'm just pointing out realities, certain realities. Although I will say this, you have been
Did you stop at a rest stop on your way here?
I did not. There are no rest stops.
I stopped
between
at
here.
A rest stop.
No.
Between here and...
Between here and here. I live really nearby.
Here and here. Yeah. You know, let me ask you something. Why is that? So we moved studios, and we got further from my house and closer to yours. Why is that?
Okay, we're not closer to mine. We're actually further from mine.
Oh, my God.
I practically lived like a half a mile from Miranda Street.
There are nights where you and your kids slipped out on those mattresses. Is that correct?
It was fun for the whole family. It was like camping.
Come on, kids. We're going to sleep under the stars.
We're going to camp out on a bloody mattress tonight.
Daddy, we don't like the wires all over the place.
Don't sleep on the wires, kids. Just move them aside.
There were always just sort of loose wires. You'd be walking on that street, and then your feet would feel so... You'd look down, and there'd be like wires around your
feet. Yeah, it was really weird. I feel like some sort of electronics genius lived on that street. Or maybe...
Well, there were a lot of appliances, because, of course... Roger Federer's appliance store is over there.
Yeah. Well, I don't know nothing about this neighborhood yet.
No, me neither.
It's in the heart of Burbank, though.
All I know is I drove around it and around it and around it. And then I turned on Olive Street.
Olive Street?
I had to go on Olive for a while. I have no idea why.
Okay. Hey, is there anything else with the auction? Anything new? Any new bids?
For those who are considering bidding, I want you to know that the eyebrows and the mustache and the hair were made from hair from the barbershop that the bank robbers acquired from the barbershop.
Did they really?
Yeah. Yeah.
So they acquired hair from the barbershop.
Yeah.
They really wanted it to be that realistic in the middle of the night.
Yeah. And then when they did...
So this is real hair?
You know, it is real hair, yeah.
Ew.
Don't touch it because it comes off somewhat easily.
Yeah, I would think after 50 years.
Yeah. When they did go into the ocean, which they did, they did it on a raft that they had made from 50 raincoats.
50 raincoats?
Yeah.
They made the raft out of raincoats?
Yeah.
How does that work?
I have no idea. I only have the...
You know the fact.
As soon as I can get my hands on the raincoat life raft, I will do that.
Where is the money from this auction going to?
I'm waiting for Oleg...
The Russian oligarch.
Yeah, I'm waiting for the Russian oligarch's money to come in, and then I'll let you know where it goes to.
Okay.
I have a lot of expenses.
You certainly do.
You know, you don't tape in a place like this for free, let me tell you.
No, if you're driving all the way to Nevada, that's the gas money alone. Coming up, Jane Goodall said, I like to envision the whole world as a jigsaw puzzle. If you look at the whole picture, it is overwhelming and terrifying. But if you work on your little part of the jigsaw and know that people all over the world are working on their little bits, that's what will give you hope. How can we do our little bit to be environmentally friendly? Justin Erisman is here to help us find out. That's coming up when we return on Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone.
On this day in unremarkable history, Geronimo said, "Here I go! I'm gonna jump! 1, 2... 3, William!
And we're back. Paula Poundstone, how you doing?
Oh, good. Hey.
What?
We just got another bid.
Oh, we did?
Yeah,
on our online auction for this papier-mâché bust created as part of the Alcatraz escape.
That is correct.
Okay.
It comes from Paul Manafort.
Paul Manafort.
Former employee of Russian oligarch Oleg Deripaska, who won the Lewis and Clark keelboat last week,
sure,
by the way.
Sure, sure, sure.
Now, Paul Manafort is in the U.S. penitentiary.
He's in prison. I don't know how he'd be bidding in an online auction.
Well, he also, and I don't know how he does this either, but he still consults for some Republican operatives. I wonder if we should be worried about him bidding on the Freedom Head.
Well, it's only a Freedom Head because you've called it a Freedom Head.
But, I mean, I wonder if we should contact the prison and let them know that Paul Manafort is bidding.
You think he's... Oh!
I don't know. You
Paul,
know what?
Make your own paper mache head. You don't want to be bidding on this.
$2,550.
$2,550?
Yeah, so that's where
he is always willing to pay more money than... Because, like, paper mache is... It's literally made of, like, newspaper and paste, isn't it?
$2,550. That's what he used to pay for a shirt. So...
Yeah.
This is nothing to Paul
well,
Manafort.
Well, that's...
all right.
Bidding stands at yeah. that number.
All right. Yeah.
I question the wisdom of that. Because if he's trying to make a prison break, number one, it's been done. Number two, a 50-year-old papier-mâché head is not going to be very helpful.
Well, it might be. I don't know.
Well, wouldn't a new one be more durable?
He's not looking all that spry.
Point taken. Now, Paul, you are incredibly conscientious and conscious about eco-friendly living.
I try
you
really
hard.
You
care about the environment.
I do, but I still have all these questions. You know, it's hard to know if products that claim to be environmentally friendly really are.
Why?
I mean, because they write it on the label, and what do I know?
Well, if it's on the label, it's true, isn't it?
Well, this is exactly the problem.
You don't think so?
Not always, Adam. No, I don't.
But it's on a label. There are laws.
How about turtle wax? Do you think that comes from a turtle? No.
Well, that's a name.
You can't trust everything.
It's a brand name.
On a label. I wonder if we have anyone.
I don't think Dr. Pepper's a doctor.
Well, he's certainly curing my virus. I wonder if we have anyone that could help us.
Well, by outstanding coincidence, we do. Just to my right, Justin Erisman received his PhD in chemistry and his undergraduate degree in environmental studies from the University of Southern California. He subsequently earned a law degree at the Loyola Law School and serves as an adjunct faculty member of the environmental studies program at the University of Southern California, USC. Please welcome Justin Erisman, professor. Welcome.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Well, thanks for joining us. Is there a standard for the term environmentally friendly, and who is responsible for certifying that claim?
Well, so in the U.S., under federal law, we have anti-false advertising laws,
yes.
which are regulated by the Federal Trade Commission.
You see, Poundstone?
So the Federal Trade Commission is in charge of policing that. So they
do
actually,
they?
And they do, yes. But at the same time, there's a lot of products that are out there, a lot of claims being made. So it's difficult to police all of them. But they do issue, in addition to taking enforcement actions, they've issued green guides, which they first issued in 1992, updated in 1996, 1998, and 2012, which give guidance on what claims you can make. So they have this comprehensive guidance system for companies to consult when they want to make these type of claims. And if companies step out of bounds, the Federal Trade Commission, the FTC, can bring an action against those companies either in the way of—
Do they?
They do. Yeah, I don't
Give
have,
me an example of like the Federal Trade Commission steps in and says, you can't call them panda chips. There's no real panda in them.
Yeah, I'm more familiar with the green guides themselves, which advise companies to stay away from sort of generalized claims of eco-friendly, you know, good for the environment. And their guidance is that if you're going to make those types of claims, you should be specific as to what it is about your claim that's eco-friendly or environmentally friendly so the consumer knows what it is that they're actually getting from this product. And they also said to be cognizant of any trade-offs that might come from their processes or the way they do business.
Right, exactly. Well,
the trade-offs is the big thing. Go ahead, Paul. Yeah.
And I'm not sure that they do follow those guidelines then, because I'm forever buying things that say environmentally friendly, but they don't explain why.
Yeah, I mean, and they do so at their peril. I mean, the FTC could enforce the anti-false advertising laws against them.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there's so many on the market that enforcement is somewhat limited.
Right.
And so there are a lot of companies that are getting away with some dubious claims. And
uh-huh.
it's your job as the consumer, if you want to be environmentally friendly, to educate yourself about what the claims are being made and by whom and whether there's actually any substance to those claims.
Well, let's educate ourselves.
I was hoping I didn't have that much work to do. Now, let me
ask you
something.
You weren't told there'd be homework.
No, I was hoping there wouldn't be. When they say something is made from post-consumer content, right, is that the same as that it's recyclable? If it was made from, so technically it was...
Well, recyclable or recycled?
So recyclable. So it already went through a lifespan once,
recyclable.
Right?
In general, it means that it's recycled.
Right.
And typically, then it would also be recyclable, although there may be some instances where it has been recycled and it's now no longer recyclable. But so for an example of post-consumer content, newspapers are a good example. So let's say I buy a newspaper, I read it, I put it in the blue bin for recycling. It goes, it gets processed, and is recycled into a new newspaper.
Uh-huh.
And that newspaper has a label on it saying that it's post-consumer content because I've already consumed it as a consumer.
Right.
Which is distinct from pre-consumer content, which is material that hasn't actually reached the consumer yet. So this is processing.
I've never even heard of that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, it's in the labels typically.
And I haven't seen anything genuinely new in a newspaper in years. So...
So what is pre-consumer? What is it?
Pre-consumer content. So pre-consumer content is, you know, taking the example of newspapers, when they're printing the newspaper, you may have some rejects, for example, if it's blurry text that can't go to the consumer.
Uh-huh.
So they take that and they put it into the reject pile.
Oh.
Or maybe they have to trim some edge off of the newspaper and they put that into the waste bin. So that's pre-consumer content. Never actually got to the consumer, but they can reuse
it. But it is recycled.
Yeah, so they can recycle it into the new newspaper that they make. So it's not what we typically think of in terms of recycling, but it does reduce the use of materials. And so a lot of times when you see these types of materials, it'll say includes 10% post-consumer content, 20% pre-consumer content, which means then it would have 70% new material in there as well. So that would be at least partially recycled, and in most cases it would then still be recyclable.
Recyclable. Recyclable.
He's going to keep doing that, I think.
Yeah.
He's mocking my vocabulary.
I'm singing along with it.
It's not. We're not singing it now.
Okay.
Have you ever used toilet paper where you actually see some words printed on it that were from a newspaper?
I have not, no. Although
Have you?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. It was like recycled paper and there was like a little news blurb.
See, where I come from, we call that newspaper.
Newspaper?
And not toilet paper at all. It's just
it sounds like you were using
newspaper.
No,
as toilet paper.
It was actually I forget. It was at somebody's house. Now I use toilet paper made from bamboo, and it says right on the package that it is environmentally friendly. And of course, it's not so friendly if you're a bamboo tree. But is there any reason to believe that toilet paper made from bamboo is any more environmentally friendly than any other source?
There is. Natural Resource Defense Council just issued a study fairly recently about traditional toilet papers, showing that they use materials that come from clear-cutting the Canadian boreal forest, which is a big issue environmentally. Clear-cutting creates a lot of environmental damage.
What is clear-cutting exactly?
So clear-cutting is when they go into an area and they basically just cut down every single tree and then haul it out and leave a barren landscape behind.
So Charmin is literally cutting down the environment from whence their cartoon bears come.
You could say that.
Okay.
I don't like the cartoon bears, but
I don't either. But I think they deserve a home.
The whole "my hiney is clean" thing is just gross.
Oh no, it's horrible.
Yeah,
it's horrible.
And the two parents staring at a piece of staring at the underwear on the floor, going, "I'm not going to pick it up."
I didn't see that one.
Yeah,
I never want to see that one.
Yeah, it's not good. All right, so there are companies that clear cut, and that's where they get their paper from.
Correct. Yes,
But bamboo is a different story altogether.
Yes. So bamboo is actually a grass. And the reason that they use bamboo.
Is it?
It is. Yeah. Bamboo is a grass.
Wow. It's an aggressive grass.
Yes. It's a
very. Because we have it in our backyard. And man, you couldn't clear cut that if you wanted to. It just keeps coming back.
Yeah. Well, you can clear cut it, but it'll be back the next day.
Yeah. Now, my daughter says I can pour water with soap suds from Method brand soap onto the mulch. Is my daughter the one who certifies the environmentally friendly claim? That's the first thing I need to know, because she certainly seems to think she is. But she says that if it's Method soap, she has a tendency to like a soap that's very expensive. She said that if it's Method soap, you can pour those suds on the mulch pile. Do you think that's right?
It might be. I'm not familiar with Method soap. I don't know
what... Oh, it's in my kitchen.
I've never been to your kitchen, so no, I'm not familiar with it.
It's also in my bathroom.
I mean, it depends on what the chemical composition is. There are... So I'm not familiar with your daughter's ability to certify environmentally friendly claims, but there are government agencies that can certify claims.
Yeah.
And then there's also third parties that certify environmental claims. So you have the EPA, for example, that has some certifications.
But what are the odds of them coming to my kitchen? Do you see the problem I'm having?
I do.
Can you get an EPA person to come by your house and check out your environmental situation?
I don't think
so. Carry the bucket out. Okay. Here's another, and it was alluded to in the introduction. I use environmentally friendly dog waste bags. And I think that, what that means is that the bags biodegrade. And I remember a few years ago, you might be too young to remember this, but there were biodegradable trash bags for a while. And then we were told, oh, don't use those either, because they broke down, but they broke down basically to smaller pieces of plastic that just flew around and went in the ocean. So the other option I have is I eat a lot of sun-made raisin bread, okay, and I could just use those bags.
Well, so there's two things.
I just put my hands up and I don't know.
Yeah, and you've and almost stumped the professor here, but I think he has some something.
So there's two things. The term degradable is actually a term that's enforced these days. So in order for something to be called degradable, it should, as they say, return to nature within 1 year.
I think 1 year.
Yeah, they say a reasonable period of time, and then they define that as being 1 year.
Oh yeah.
So use those doggy bags. Don't stock up on those doggy bags.
Well, no, I took one out of my pocket the other day from a vest that I hadn't worn in a while, and it couldn't be used. I mean,
it fell apart.
It was very holy. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so that's a good sign that it's degradable.
Unless you're trying to clean up waste in that moment.
Yeah.
But yeah, right. Okay.
And how about the raisin bread?
Well, so the raisin bread bags, I would say if they're not degradable and they're not recyclable, then I would say it's a good use, provided that they're providing you the sanitation that you need. You know, if it's not a sanitary bag and it's not sealing well, then...
They're not sanitary bags, are there anyways? I just tie them up at the top.
Well, no, I just mean in terms of giving you good protection from what you're putting into it.
Oh, I see. From picking up the waste?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, but the sun-made raisin bags, I think they now say they're recyclable. But even that claim is sometimes, like, for example, styrofoam will sometimes be marked with one of those little recyclable triangles. But that's only true if you have a styrofoam recycling facility in your area, which in Santa Monica we do not. So, like, for the sun-made raisin bags to say they're recyclable doesn't necessarily mean they can be recycled in the Santa Monica system.
That's right. And what is recyclable is very dependent on your location. So if you want to know what you can recycle, you should check with your local waste hauler or check with the city or with LA County. So LA County has a website that gives advice as to what is recyclable. I live in a city in LA County that gives different advice because they have more specific recycling.
What city is that?
Well, it's La Cañada.
Oh, aren't you fancy with your extra recycling abilities, huh?
Yeah, we are pretty special. We're pretty proud of our town.
Do they do more recycling there than other towns, La Cañada?
Well, based on what we have on our waste haulers website, they do, at least with respect to LA County. So there's more materials that I can put into my recycling bin.
How about styrofoam?
Styrofoam, I don't recall. Definitely not styrofoam peanuts.
But
maybe large pieces of styrofoam, it's possible. I would have to double check that.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm thinking of just swinging by your house when I need to recycle.
You should just drop it off at his house in La
Cañada. I may as well.
It's kind of on your way to
this
studio.
With a little thing of Method soap so you could cheat. Yeah, it probably is on my way. I'll just follow you home tonight. How about that?
Well, waste pickup is on Fridays, so just so you know.
Oh, okay.
Oh, that's great. That's great. You can just load up the car next time.
Yeah, I'm happy to do that.
There we go. Pete Seeger said, if it can't be reduced, reused, repaired, rebuilt, refurbished, refinished, resold, recycled, or composted, then it should be restricted, redesigned, or removed from production. Stay tuned to find out how to be smart about being environmentally friendly. The Cat of the Week is Lafayette from Rockingham, North Carolina. Thank you.
Thank you, Daniel. And we're back with Justin Arisman. There's a lot of letters there to just get to saying Aris.
Yeah, you know, I hated filling in Scantron tests when I was a kid because I was the last to finish.
Yeah, of course you were.
Why? Because there's a lot of letters in your name?
Yeah, a lot of bubbles to fill in.
Oh. Really hell if you're ever lost at sea and have to say who you are by a semaphore.
How many letters is it?
You know, I've never counted.
It's E-H-R-E-S-M-A-N-N. And
I didn't count.
Neither did I. But our listeners can. And please send that in at nobodylistenstopaulapoundstone@gmail.com. How many letters are in the professor's name? All right. So, Paula, you want to kick this off?
All right. Okay. So we're talking about, you know, ways to be environmentally friendly. And Captain Crinkle had a question, which is, are the cornstarch disposable cutlery that you get with to-go foods viable?
Are they making a difference?
They do. And so one of the advantages of those materials is that they are more degradable than single-use plastics. Mm-hmm. So you have that environmental advantage that they will degrade more rapidly or will degrade at all. And, you know, depending on the product, some of these products are made with agricultural byproducts. So, for example, there's a company called EcoWare that uses agricultural byproducts that would otherwise have been thrown away and turns those into utensils and packaging and that sort of thing. So they're actually, one, creating something that's degradable, and two, they're using material that would have just otherwise gone to waste. So there are a lot of advantages to those types of products.
I thought California had a law, or was considering a law, or was it just Santa Monica? I can't remember. Where restaurants weren't supposed to give out the cutlery without the customer asking.
Well, they have that law for straws now. So if you want a straw in a restaurant, you are going to have to ask for it.
Yeah.
Although not everybody complies with it. So right. I have been to restaurants recently where they just gave me a straw without me asking for it.
Yeah.
You know, I got to say, I would love it if straws were gone entirely.
There are people with like Parkinson's or things like that that need a straw in order to be able to drink.
Absolutely. The middle ground that I dislike is those paper straws. Man, do I dislike those. Those break down halfway through your drink.
Yeah, I remember we used to have them for milk in the cafeteria in elementary school. We knew then they sucked.
Yeah.
The wax straws.
They still suck.
No, in fact, we thought we were living high when we got the plastic ones. But that's
You're not a paper straw apologist, are you, Professor?
I am not. No, okay. I detest the paper straws. I do.
Excellent.
I do like the silicone straws and the metal straws, although you have to actually clean those.
I have silicone straws in my breasts.
Do you really?
Yeah.
That might account for some of the shape issues that you've been facing lately.
Yeah. I don't know if that's germane.
Probably shouldn't have got it put in.
Let me ask you something.
Okay.
I use bar cloths to clean all day long in my house. You know, little terry cloth rags. Instead of paper towels, exactly. And my cats pee all over the house. I'm forever spilling things. There's a lot of use for those bar rags. On the other hand, that means about once a week, I wash a load of cloths. Now, you were talking before about the trade-offs.
Also, you use a coal-powered laundry machine, don't you?
I am using a coal-powered laundry machine, and my children are the miners.
Oh.
So is that offset by not using paper towels?
I don't know. Professor?
Well, so I would say in an area like Southern California where water is scarce, you may want to switch to a hybrid method and not shun paper towels completely.
Oh.
So that's what I do. I use both the, as you say, the bar cloths and paper towels. So if
Do you have 13 cats?
I do not, no. Okay. I'm actually very allergic to cats.
So are you?
13 cats would probably put me in the hospital.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I'm
so, Paula, make sure there's no fur in the recycling when you bring it over to his house.
Yeah. even my vest has fur all over it. I'm surprised you haven't had a reaction. Oh, well, okay. That's important to know because I have eschewed paper towels.
Yeah. No, I would say the hybrid method of using paper towels when there's a small spill or something that would soil the rag that you can only use it one time.
Yeah.
If you can use a cloth multiple times or reserve it for bigger spills, that would probably be a better method. If you're in an area where there's plenty of water and water resource is not a concern, then maybe you would just use...
Well, I think that's nowhere now, isn't it? Except for the seas are rising. But ultimately, water is going to be the thing that we fight over.
Yeah, sure. But there are some areas, you know, maybe in the Pacific Northwest where they don't have water scarcity. But certainly...
You can just leave your bar cloth out on the porch at night, and it'll get washed it'll by get washed nature by, with nature a little method soap on it.
Nature will wash it with, the, with its method. Let's talk about reduce, reuse, recycle.
Yes.
Because you had something interesting to say about that, in that I just thought of those as three things we should do.
No, so those are ordered in level of importance. So
recycle's the least important of those.
Well, it's sort of our last stop. We want to, before we get to recycle, we want to reduce and then reuse and then, if needed, recycle.
And is how much of a difference is that going to make?
Well, on an individual basis.
Or on a planetary basis.
On a planetary basis, it does have an impact. I mean, if we can all, say, cut our waste in half, that will have a huge impact on the amount of waste that's going into landfills, the amount of materials that are being made for us to use, which will reduce the emissions from the manufacturing. So it can have a big impact.
Like, is me going to the store and looking for eco-friendly products the most efficient way for us to reduce and reuse and recycle our resources?
It's not. So I think one of the most frustrating parts for me of the contemporary environmental movement is that a lot of the onus for environmental protection has been pushed onto the individual. And, you know, as we've been discussing during this episode, it requires a lot of education on the part of the individual to know what you need to do in order to be environmentally friendly. Mm-hmm. And I think we could have a much bigger impact if we push that onus back onto our governments, back onto large corporations, so that they can do more of the top-down command and control environmental protection that is necessary.
Well, I think part of the reason for that, right, because we always used to be told by the environmental movement that we are activists with our money. So what you purchase or what you don't purchase is your activism to some degree, right? So if I'm not supporting a company that does bad things, then they'll stop doing bad things.
Right, absolutely. And we can't buy our way out of these problems. I think the first step is...
What?
That's right. The first step is for individuals to reduce their own consumption.
Right.
And, you know, if these products that they're buying make them feel good about their environmentalism and work as a gateway drug towards more environmentalism, I think that's fantastic. You know, if people buy bamboo toilet paper and it makes them feel good and they want to chase that dragon to buy more environmentally friendly products or donate to environmental advocacy groups, that's fantastic. But right now, what we really need is large structural changes that will get us out of the problems that we have. And
for that, we look to Paula Poundstone.
Well, no. If we're talking to our listeners that are sitting with a pad of paper beside them and a pen right now, determined to act on what you have to say, what are the top three things that you would ask of them to have a more effective movement?
First, I would say is on an individual level is reduce your own consumption. Mm-hmm. The second thing is I would.
You're calling them fat. You're calling our listeners fat.
I am not.
No, he's not talking.
It sounded
he's not
like
talking
he was.
About that kind of consumption.
No, it sounds like he just, you know.
No, this isn't food consumption. This is just material consumption.
I think you're
consumption.
Perfect the way you are, listeners. Just
no,
so you know.
He's talking about. Okay.
And just so you know, the whole concept of retail therapy is flawed. You know, when people buy more stuff, it doesn't actually make them happier. Studies have shown that buying less stuff makes you happier. And so, you know, in terms of reducing your impact, you could think about maybe not buying some unnecessary clothing. The fashion industry has a huge impact on the environment that people are not always aware of. Uh-huh. So I think that would be the first step is just reducing your consumption. The second step would be educating yourself on environmental issues and finding what you're passionate about. So if the reason you're buying toilet paper that's made from bamboo is because you care about Canadian boreal forest, then investigate the issue of Canadian boreal forest and how we protect it. Because if you stop buying the toilet paper, that's not necessarily going to stop the forest from being cut down. They still might cut down the forest to use it for other products as well. So I think mm-hmm. educating yourself and finding what you're really passionate about is important so that you can then run with that passion and maybe donate to environmental advocacy groups, donate to politicians and support politicians who are environmentally friendly and hold them accountable for their actions on the environment.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, thank you, Justin Arisman, for recycling good information about being environmentally friendly. And now we're going to take that information you gave us and we're going to run it through the old Pounce-tonator.
House band Daniel Grimsland, could I have a little background music? I'm going to tell you what I know now about living environmentally friendly.
Yeah.
I have spent years using bar mops to clean up spills and rogue cat pee in my house, and it turns out I may have caused California's water shortage. I'm sorry, Colorado, who California steals our water from. I thought I was saving trees by not using paper towels. Jesus, this is a blow. And I've been using bamboo toilet paper to avoid toilet paper made by clear-cutting forests. But the bamboo, it turns out, is taken from the set of Survivor. Look, you guys, don't give up on your efforts to live an environmentally friendly life. But the truth is, to save the Earth, vote. Vote hard, vote green. This problem is bigger than straws, but don't use straws. We need governments all over the world to help. The good news is, I don't have to buy any more toilet paper at all. This whole subject is constipating me. I don't think I'll ever poop again.
He is an adjunct professor at the University of Southern California's Environmental Studies Program and a partner in Lewis Rocha Rothgerber Christie's Intellectual Property Practice Group. Wow. Thank you for being on our show, Justin Erisman. Coming up, Tony Anita Hull shares your descriptions of our show. That's coming up right after this. According to climate scientists, we have 9 years and 42 weeks until the Earth begins to become uninhabitable. We're back, and I'm really starting to settle into this studio, Paula. I feel like I've got my chair adjusted right now. I've gotten used to the faces on the other side of the glass over in the incubator looking at us.
Yeah, I keep tapping on the window.
Just to make sure they're alive?
Yeah, trying to get them to move. I want them to go into the little tunnel there that I brought.
You brought a habit trail?
I brought a thing from my fish tank.
That wouldn't even be appropriate for babies in an incubator, let alone full-sized editors and producers.
Yeah, but I think they can get through. Hey, wait!
What?
Hey, look! There's another bid!
In our auction for the papier-mâché head.
For the Freedom Head, the papier-mâché head from the Alcatraz Escape.
Okay. I'm uncomfortable calling it the Freedom Head. Because although we do sentimentally want to root for people breaking out of prison, we make movies about them. We are talking about some genuine criminals who genuinely escaped from a prison and put themselves back in the general population.
Okay, so the justice system and the Alcatraz always believed that they died, that they perished in the water.
I know that was
my
belief.
Never found their bodies.
That's
by the way,
water.
In terms of not calling it the Freedom Head, I want you to know that the men who made it named two of the heads Oink and Oscar. They had pet names.
Well, which one do we have here tonight?
Heads. This
which,
is
by
Oscar.
The way, I'm unsure of the provenance of these heads. I'm not sure this is Oink or Oscar.
This is Oscar.
How do you know?
Because I asked when I got it.
Okay.
So in 2013, the FBI got a letter claiming to come from John Anglin, one of the brothers.
Okay.
That he was alive.
Right.
And that he had cancer. And he was willing to agree to go back to prison for a year.
Right.
If he could get treated for his cancer.
Wow.
Yeah.
How did the authorities respond to that letter?
They didn't. In fact, they covered it up. They didn't even say they got the letter for a long time.
Because they were embarrassed that he was alive?
I don't know. They never really verified that he was or wasn't alive. I think they tried to do like DNA stuff, but I don't know.
It's likely that this guy just went ahead and died of cancer.
More than likely. I think it's weird to get your health care from prison.
What do you mean?
I mean, I think it's weird to check into prison to get your health care.
Well, I think that's a good statement about where we are today with health care in America. Am I right?
Adam, answer the phone.
What?
Answer the phone.
I don't think that's necessary at this juncture, Paula.
Answer the phone.
Hello.
Hello, I'm looking for Adam Felbach.
Who's this? Wow, who is this?
Am I, by any chance, the 100th caller?
No, you are not the 100th caller. If I'm counting correctly, you are the 40th caller on our program.
That's all right. I don't want to hang out with you.
Who is this?
I'll give you a hint. I'm a wonderful tenor.
A wonderful tenor?
A fabulous hoofer.
Fabulous hoofer?
And most importantly, for our purposes, I am Witty Rose Feynman's fixer.
Oh!
You are Herschel Peckenstein, or whatever that name is.
I am, I forgive you. I am Herschel Bernardi Jr.
This is actually Herschel Bernardi.
I am Herschel Bernardi Jr.
Do I have to say it with a Brooklyn accent?
I am Herschel Bernardi Jr.
Okay, Herschel. Well, welcome to our program. This is good, because I've been wanting to speak to somebody from Winnie's World anyway.
I believe you are in breach of your contract with the Herschel Bernardi Community Theater in Huntington, New York.
Okay. Now, just because you're on our show, I do feel like I have to remind our listeners, our longtime caller, Winnie Rose Feynman, decided to book the Herschel Bernardi Community Theater
for
a production of Love Letters starring me and
correct.
Her. And frankly, I'm creeped out by her, and I was not going to be willing to be in the...
Your producer-director, Winnie Rose Feynman, tells me you have not been rehearsing your part in Love Letters.
I have not been, because I've never consented to be in Love Letters.
It was a verbal agreement.
There was no verbal agreement.
Well, Mr. Feynman, you have fucked with the wrong shut-in.
Wait, who's the shut-in here, you or Winnie?
Miss Winnie Rose Feynman, your producer director.
She's not my producer director. I've never
in
agreed.
Love Letters.
No, Love Letters, Mr. Bernardi. I'm sure your theater is lovely, but nothing is going to.
The theater was named after my father.
Oh, he was also Herschel Bernardi?
Yes, Herschel Bernardi Sr.
Really?
I am Herschel Bernardi Jr.
Let me ask you something, Mr. Bernardi. What faith are you, if I can get personal?
What are you?
I'm asking if you're with the name Herschel, I assume that you were, like my ancestry, Jewish.
I'm Jewish.
Okay, we don't name people after living people. It's just, it's absolutely taboo. It's just not.
My father was dead several months before I was born.
Oh! All right, well,
you brought up a very painful topic, Mr. Feynman.
I'm sorry I did that. Yeah. Touche. Okay, so listen, Mr. Bernardi, I'm sure you have a lovely theater. I want
it's
nothing.
It's a lovely theater. It's named after my father,
the late Herschel Bernardi Sr., who never lived to have his name be made senior.
It was a tragedy.
Okay. So I'm not coming to do the show.
What do you got to you?
What?
Bar mitzvah that day? What do you mean you're not coming to do the show?
I'm actually an atheist.
Don't let that stop you. You get a lot of gifts.
You know, Mr. Bernardi, for one, I'm not going to do this.
You have not been rehearsing your part.
I can't spell
letters.
This out anymore. I have no intention of rehearsing the part. But you can do me a favor, sir, if you don't mind. And I say this with respect.
How did we reach that point in the conversation?
We just got there.
Yeah.
And here's the favor you could do. And it would be a favor to you and more than anything to Winnie Rose Feynman. You must know some nice people, especially running a theater. You must know some actors.
I know some very fine people.
Could you introduce Winnie around a little bit? I think she needs to meet people... human people, not on the podcasts or radios, around her.
Mr. Feynman, listen to me carefully right now.
Okay.
She has her heart set on you.
Jesus Christ.
I have to go now. My client is calling on the other line.
Oh, Jesus. Don't take that. All right. Oh, thank you, Mr. Bernardi. Okay. Wow.
Wow. Boy, you are in big trouble.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know why you don't see the words written on the wall there.
What are the words that are written on the wall, Paul?
Rehearse!
I'm not going to rehearse! This is dangerous. I don't want to encourage her in any way. I want to move us on. Can I move us on?
Yes, let's move us on.
Now, Paula, you've been
your
in various...
legal troubles are not of interest to everyone.
Paula, you've at various times expressed a dissatisfaction with the way you describe our show. Is that correct?
Yes, I'm not very good at describing the show.
Now, and I've heard you in interviews, in fact.
I've been on stage before, and I say from the stage, I'll say, I do a podcast called Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone. And usually, you know, not a huge amount of people, but some people applaud and kind of hoot and indicate that they do listen to Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone. And then I begin to try to describe it. It just falls apart.
Right, and we've been soliciting, with various degrees of success, descriptions from our listeners of our podcast. In fact... And I want to take a moment to take my hat off to your manager, our producer, Bonnie Captain Crinkle Burns, because on the new website, which is now live,
it's up.
The first thing you see are some of our listeners' show descriptions. It rotates in. When you reload the page, you get a different show description. And it's wonderful. And, you know, Bonnie, for weeks, has been guaranteeing us that by the time you hear the show, the podcast, the new website will be up, and finally yeah. it is.
It's up.
And we said that's where you're going to be able to buy the t-shirts and the pussy pillows.
The Poundstone pussy pillows are there. The t-shirts made from a tri-poly blend, the remarkably soft t-shirts with the self-portrait on the left breast and a memorable quote on the back. They're available at paulapoundstone.com, which is the home of my new website.
Are they, though? Because at the moment we are recording this right now, the store on the website does not work.
Well, no, but that, Bonnie says, that's going to be fixed.
Is that going to be fixed by the time that people hear this podcast?
The reason it's not working is Wendell's panicking. He's very concerned.
Your assistant Wendell.
My assistant Wendell, who
actually sews the pussy pillows.
He does. We as you pointed out, we've made a sweatshop out of my son's old bedroom, and Wendell goes in there all hours of the night, sewing the Poundstone pussy pillows with the cat joke on one side and the grommet, so you can tie a string and tug the catnip toy.
Which you should include the string.
I don't include the string. You know what? I don't want to enable the listeners.
Well, I do.
So they bring their own string, and then I can sign it to your cat on the other side. And Wendell is so worried that there's going to be
an influx of orders,
an avalanche of orders.
Yeah. That he hasn't gotten the necessary information about the website.
He said he doesn't want the store part to be working until he has all his supplies ready.
Okay, so Captain Crinkle, you can't guarantee one way or the other whether the store will be open for business at the time that the listeners hear this.
No, it's going to be.
It's up.
It's up.
It's up.
That is the correct answer.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily the true answer, but it is on this show the correct answer.
It's up. Go ahead, you guys. Go over there, paulapoundstone.com, and just feast your eyes on the shopping center.
We don't yet have an adjunct site, a link, but we will soon.
What is adjunct site?
A related site that's going to piggyback on yours.
What does adjunct mean?
Connected to?
So someone's an adjunct professor? They're connected to a professor?
I think so. Huh. You want to look up adjunct?
I don't.
Okay, then let's continue.
Okay.
Because Paula doesn't attach the string to the grommet, I'm attaching the string to the grommet at a related site, and I will sell them to you. Buy the pussy pillows, send them to me, and you can have not Paula Poundstone's pussy pillows, but Felber's feline fun bags for a low, low price.
This is a total lie. That's not true. You guys, get the Poundstone pussy pillow.
Get the fun bags, because it's like the pussy pillow with a less offensive name.
If you see...
Tony Anita Hall is hating that.
Adam only says that because it upsets Tony when he says fun bags, which is not an expression that I had ever heard before.
Speaking of Tony Anita Hall, let's get her up to the microphone. Tony, you've got more show descriptions from our listeners.
Okay, before Tony tells her show description,
she's never going to get to that.
No, she is. You know how she got back from this cruise, right? By the skin of her fucking teeth.
All right, so she's going to take a cruise with her brother and her niece, and then it gets dry docked for 4 days because of coronavirus, and then somebody spills wine on her brother, and he decides not to come, which was the whole reason Tony was going in the first place. And then her niece, who's her age and does not get along with Tony, they spend the whole cruise yelling at each other and crying at intervals.
Yeah.
And as a result of this, Tony, what have you done?
I booked another cruise.
Yeah, just in time for the virus to flower. I told you, I was listening to NPR one day and they had a virus expert on, and he said if they were going to construct a laboratory for the, a fertile ground for the virus to replicate.
If evil aliens were to say, how can we eliminate the human race? The answer would be
a cruise ship. Because it's people in tight quarters. There's no, they talked about how they were quarantining people. Well, they weren't quarantining people because the ventilation system goes from room to room and it's an airborne virus. And so, and then people all eating together and
a lot of older people. It's always buffets, isn't it, Tony?
Yeah, there's always people like touching the shrimp with one finger and it's not big enough. I don't like this shrimp.
I sneezed on it, but I don't want it anymore. Yeah. I'm just going to leave it there.
Yeah. Why?
We got a great deal.
It doesn't matter.
So you and your brother are going to get that great cruise that you didn't get.
Yeah, it's in December. Lots of time.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, we should be totally through. Yeah. You know what? I'm French Trump. I'm wearing a mega mask.
Oh, look at that, everybody. It's our second favorite hand puppet on the show, French
Trump. The best way to prevent the beer virus is to avoid talking to scientists, doctors, and public health experts.
All right.
Do not worry about this virus, Tony Anita Hall. You are the poster child for the virus.
Oh, boy.
It will just disappear like a miracle, Tony. That's how it will work, Tony Anita Hall. It will disappear like a miracle. Did it say that on your brochure from the cruise company?
Trump, it didn't.
Yeah, well, that's it. I'll tell you what, Tony Anita Hall, vote for me and you will not get the virus.
A vote for you, French
vote
Trump.
Vote for French Trump is a vote against the virus. You will not get it.
I want to go back a few minutes. I don't think we even need to rewind the tape. Did you call it the beer virus?
It's a beer virus. It's caused by beer.
It is not caused by
it
beer.
It is Corona beer. No, yeah, what's the matter with you?
It absolutely has nothing to do with
you. Do you not watch the news?
I know that it is a form of coronavirus.
Yeah,
but
it's Corona precisely.
No, but Corona means head. It's a head cold, basically.
Isn't it a head cold?
Well, yeah, it's a virus.
It is like a cold. You are right. You are right.
Well, thank you,
French
Trump.
It is like a cold. That's exactly right. And you can use a flu shot. That will help. You can use any kind of shot. You can shoot up heroin, and you will not get the coronavirus.
I am almost certain that's not true.
Any kind of needle injected into yourself will protect you so long as you vote for Trump.
This is an amazing amount of disinformation, and it's no wonder that people like Tony Anita Hall are booking cruises.
The beer virus is to stay in a Trump hotel, or eat a Trump steak, or buy some of Ivanka's cheesy clothing.
You just called it cheesy.
Cheesy cloth.
Cheesy cloth, okay. Cheese cloth, yeah, sure.
You can also wear a thick layer of crap on your face.
What kind of crap?
You know, makeup crap. Yeah, like I do, or like Ivanka does.
Oh, you mean like
and
spray
you
tan?
Fine. Neither of us get sick at all.
It is startling and dismaying how healthy you seem some of the
you,
time.
You know, you, Tony, I need to look a little pale. You could use some orange crap for your face, and that would be a protective layer. I hope your cruise is headed to China.
Why would you hope her cruise is headed to China, French?
Because now that she has the protection of the orange stuff on her face, a mega mask, vote for Trump, she should be fine.
All right. Well, I guess that's. Are you going to China on the cruise, Tony?
I am not.
Where are you headed?
Where are you going on your cruise?
We're going to Mexico and Panama.
Oh, very healthy places.
French Trump, I
the
completely...
healthiest of places.
Oh, my God.
It's many people in Mexico are trying to leave there. Did you know that?
Trying to leave there?
Many people in Mexico try to leave there.
Live there or leave there?
Live there.
Leave there or leave there?
Live there.
What are you saying?
There!
What?
Leave there!
Live there!
No!
Leave there!
Live there!
Okay! Jesus!
You don't listen, Adam Felber. Oh, that is your problem. You know, if you vote for Trump...
I'm not going to vote for
you
Trump.
You will not get the virus.
No, voting is not is not a prophylactic against catching a virus.
It is.
It is not.
It is. And
no,
you put
it
this,
isn't.
Put this red MAGA mask on.
No,
that will protect
I will not
you.
Wear your red MAGA mask.
And any needle you use, you can just stab yourself while embroidering, and you are cured.
I would have to check some sources, but I'm pretty sure that that's not medically accurate
information. The vaccination, it should be ready any day now. Don't talk to scientists. It should be ready any day now.
All right,
it's going to be ready any day now. It's about the same time that the Poundstone store will be up on the website.
Oh, that's up.
Yeah. Who's up?
Yes.
Oh, the virus is ready.
Bonnie Burns, is it up?
The vaccination is up.
No, we need to ask. I'm sorry, we need to hear from French Burns on that.
It's up.
That's that's not even French Canadian.
Tony Anita, how you're throwing your life away.
Can I talk to Paula in there?
Hello?
Hi, Paula.
Yeah, how are
you? Can we get Tony Anita Hall to maybe read us some show descriptions?
Oh, would you? Tony, are you going to read a show description?
Yeah, absolutely.
Why didn't you say so? The heck? That'll be great.
What you got, Hope?
Kevin Buckley wrote, "Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone is a comedy podcast wherein Paula Poundstone humorously explores all avenues of life while not always staying within the boundaries of truth. The show is often interrupted by the torrid bromance between co-host Adam Felber and his best friend, Mike Boom Boom Bonifit."
Oh, you know,
Adam, answer the phone.
No,
answer the phone.
I know where this is going.
Answer the phone.
Hello.
Hey, Adam, it's Mike Bonifit.
Hi, Mike.
Matt, I just heard our bromance was brought up on the show. That's so great.
That's really the opposite of great, Mike.
I really do. You know, I'll tell you something, man. I don't usually say this to guys.
Okay.
You know, but I do really care about you, man.
You could have just as easily not said that, Mike, and I felt the same.
You already felt it? You felt that I really care? Because I do, man. I really care for you.
How you doing, Mike?
It's good to talk to you. You know, so you guys are in a new studio or something?
Yeah, we're in a new studio.
I hope they put that woman, like, in another booth or something.
Which
away from
woman,
you.
Mike?
You know, that, who was that you worked up?
Paula Poundstone? Yeah. The titular host of this program?
Titular.
You know, the second it came out of my mouth. Yeah.
That's, oh, man, she's titular. You're right, man.
No, that means that she's the name in the title,
she's
Mike.
She's got some titulars. You're not. Oh, man.
Oh,
I knew you'd be thought the same. I knew we did.
Good heavens. Man,
yeah. Breastular. She's breastular.
No, that's a completely different. Anyway, yes, Paula Poundstone is still
boobular.
The host.
That's why she's boobular.
Boobular, Mike?
Jugs Poundstone, man, that's so great.
Oh, man, I hate this.
I don't know how you still work with her. She's such a bitch.
Now, hey there, Mike. I think I've warned you a couple of times, and I don't want that kind of talk sullying our new studio home.
If
you're going to bring out that kind of language about my friend and co-host, Paula Poundstone.
You mean the titular one?
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, man.
Mike, don't...
Am I the 100th caller?
You're not.
Am I the 100th caller?
41.
I can't... 41?
41.
Oh, man. I cannot wait.
You and me both, man.
I want
this to be over.
Yeah, I can't wait to hang out with you after the game.
That's not going to happen.
Yeah. Hey, is there any way... Do I have to go online or could I just bid on Oscar?
Bid on Oscar?
Yeah. The Freedom Head, man.
Oh, the Freedom Head.
I mean, just, you know... Like, I sometimes run up against the law a little bit. It would just be good to have a Freedom Head in my back pocket. You know what I mean?
I doubt it would fit in your back pocket.
If I ever get in a slammer, you know what I mean? If they ever fucking throw me in Alcatraz, I would have a goddamn Freedom Head.
Well, Mike, I think you should get off the phone, get online, because I feel like you're the dial-up sort, and maybe...
What do you mean, dial-up?
I feel like you might still use a dial-up modem to connect to the internet.
I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think I do.
But I do recommend that you get that Oscar the Head because you know what? He'd look great in the passenger seat of your Trans Am and enable you to drive in the HOV lane.
Oh, man, that'd be great.
Yeah, okay.
That'd be great.
Why don't you go ahead and bid on that, Mike?
I guess I get it. I thought maybe if I just put in a word with you.
No, that's not how an auction works.
Yeah. What are you, like straight or something?
What?
Like, I mean, do you, like, not cheat or something like that? Wait, I mean, you're
straight?
No, man, I knew you were straight. What, you think I'm coming on you or something?
It felt like it.
I knew you were straight.
Okay.
No,
it felt like you were coming on to me.
No, I wasn't coming on to you. Were you kidding me?
It felt like, all right. I missed signals, I guess.
Adam, okay. Man, I'm a guy, you know, I'm a guy. I'm into guy things. I like guy. You just said you like guys. I mean, I like you, not like that, Adam. Oh, man. Don't you have Winnie Rose Feynman to get a little something extra?
God damn it, Mike, no. Look.
She loves you, man. She loves you. I mean, I like you, but she loves you.
You should
give her
a call, because she's available. Maybe you guys could start calling each other. I feel like this might be a solution to two very deep problems in my life.
Think about giving Winnie a call. Man. You got a lot of problems. You work with a titular woman.
Goodbye, Mike. Goodbye. If I knew how to hang up this phone, I would. Goodbye.
All right, Adam. See you. Bye.
Okay, so, Tony!
Yeah!
Oh, man, my rock.
Man.
How are you? What else do we have, description-wise?
Dominic from Tucson wrote, meandering, chaotic trip down the rabbit hole that is Paula Poundstone's mind. Seemingly pointless, but oddly satisfying, much like life itself.
Well, that's...
Ooh, I like that.
I do. I don't love seemingly pointless, because I think we are explicitly pointless.
No, I think it appears that it's going to be pointless, and then it makes a hard left.
Into what? Pointiness.
Point. Pointiness. Yeah, exactly. Sharp points. Okay. Crystal clarity.
I do like that. Dominic from Tucson, I like that one. I could see that one just popping up on the website.
I could too.
Before
thank
the
you,
store
Dominic.
Does. Go ahead, Tony. Let's see. Any others? Uh-huh. It's not up, Bunny.
And finally, Isla Harlow said, "Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone is the prequel podcast where you find out why Adam stops coming to every show."
That's kind of funny.
I was
Paul,
so confused
you're not getting
by
that.
It. No.
She says it's the prequel podcast where you find out why I stopped coming to every show.
Oh.
Because, you know, the gag that I loathe about me on the show is that I'm on every show.
Well, you are, though.
Yeah, but...
Yeah. One of our listeners made note of it in one of the theme songs.
Yes, and then every listener now makes note of it because you
mentioned
it.
Well, because once their attention was drawn to it, it's just hard to avoid. You are
well,
on
I think once
every
their attention was drawn
show.
To, yes, that's right. And yeah. I think there's other things we could say about me.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay.
Go ahead.
No. Anyway, Isla, I take your meaning, and I thank you for that.
Wait a minute. Did I tell you we had another bid?
No.
I can't remember if I told you about this one.
I don't know. You've barely been here. There's
crazy.
Been all these phone
it
calls
just happened
and puppet
a minute
visits.
Ago, and then I got distracted.
Yeah.
I'm sorry if I seemed like not. I was like, we have a $500,000 bid for the Freedom Ad.
Oh, wow.
It's from Jeff Bezos. Jeff Bezos.
Jeff Bezos.
Yeah. Technically, it's from all of us because he's using taxpayer money since Amazon pays no taxes.
Yeah.
Are you going to stand for that, Scott Franciscus? I'm going to try to get Scott.
You're not going
to
get Scott to bid more than $500,000.
Huh.
Scott, I don't think Scott has that kind of money.
Wait a minute. Scott Franciscus, there it is.
What? Wait.
Now we've got an auction. Scott Franciscus.
Do we even have... Okay.
Our benefactor just bid... $500,050.
Oh, well, I'm
for
sure.
For the Freedom
sure
Head.
Bezos is out then, huh?
For Oscar.
Yeah. Too rich for my blood, said
wow.
The richest man on the planet.
Yeah. Yeah. No, he's probably out. Yeah.
All right.
All right. So, Tony, got another description?
That was the last one.
Ah, shit. Wait a minute. Wait a minute.
What?
Jeff Bezos is back.
Oh, wow.
For $600,000 for the Freedom Head.
Wow.
This is more than... The Lewis and Clark keelboat went
I like
from.
That he went big and just basically added another 100,000, kind of showing Scott Franciscus who has the money to throw around here.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I think Franciscus is finally out. Anywho, if you want to reach out to us about anything, email us at nobodylistenstopaulapoundstone@gmail.com.
Wait a minute.
Oh, no.
Paul Manafort must have had time to call his former employer, the Russian oligarch Oleg Deripaska, because he is back with $600,100 bid for the Freedom Ad. This is unbelievable.
This is quite an exciting auction going on.
Oh, man. Paul Manafort really wants Oscar the Freedom Ad.
Yeah. Again, Paul Manafort, if you're spending more than $500,000 for paper mache head, it's not that good. I mean, I'm looking at it right here. It's just a... It's a crudely
don't
done...
Don't touch it. Don't touch it. Yeah, I don't. When you touch the eyebrows, they come off.
It's flimsy. It's a flimsy, flimsy head. It's not going to be helpful for...
It's a piece of history, Adam.
I don't think Manafort wants it for history.
Like, if I had, like, the Declaration of Independence here, you'd go, oh, look, I could just tear this. It's flimsy.
Okay.
It's a piece
okay.
of history.
Yeah, no. Point
it's
taken.
A piece of history.
It is a piece of history.
It's Oscar, the Freedom Head.
Can that be sung to the tune of Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer?
Oscar the Freedom Head, yes.
More or less. All right, now, speaking of hotel soap, Paula, where are you going to be performing next?
You know, I hate promoting myself. It's the one part of my job that I really dislike.
And yet the fans love it so much. Please, Paula, please tell us where you're going to be. All right, moving on.
I'm in Stuart, Florida at the Lyric Theater on March 28th. Uh-huh. I'll be in New York City at Town Hall on April 30th. And on June 26th, I'm in Thousand Oaks, California.
That's right around here.
At the Civic Arts Plaza. It is. I drove past it on my way here tonight.
Yeah.
Come to think of it, I drove past the Lyric Theater in Stuart, Florida as well.
Yeah, I bet you did.
Oh, my
Anything
God.
Else you want to promote while we're here?
Well, I do like to mention my Butterfinger single, my rap my social justice rap song called Not My Butterfinger, and the ringtone are also now available for download on my new website, paulapoundstone.com, as well, of course, as the pussy pillows and the t-shirts that we mentioned earlier.
All right, now speaking of Butterfingers, Paul.
I heard you on. You're like Captain Crinkle's nephew or something.
No, what no, no. I wanted it to be heard. This will work continuity wise, and then you'll soon understand why.
Okay.
See, a couple of weeks ago, we received $1,000 in a request, which was from Max Hodges of.
I thought it was going to be from Trump.
No, of OMGJapan.com.
And
if you remember, they have over like 180 flavors of Kit Kats in Japan.
That's crazy.
And OMGJapan.com will import them. You can go to their website and order it, and their store is up.
Oh, mine's up.
Oh, yeah.
Mine's
sure.
up, yeah.
Anyway, so we've been testing these really weird flavors of Kit Kats, and we're under no obligation to like them. I thought it would be fun to do a blind taste test with this one. Paula, you can describe it if you want.
First of all, I have to blind myself. Do you have the acid?
No. You just have to not know what you're eating.
It seems painful, but for this show, for these nobodies,
it's a metaphorical blindness.
Happy to
you're
do
fine.
It. You know what I mean? Less trips to the eye doctor. That's my feeling.
Why don't you just talk about what you're seeing in your hand there?
Okay, I am seeing a waxy Kit Kat.
But it's not Kit Kat colored.
No, it's a tan color. It's almost the same color as Oscar, the Freedom Head.
Yeah, it's got a papier-mâché look to it.
Yeah, it kind of does.
And I know what flavor it is. You don't. I think we should taste these.
You do know what flavor it is?
Yes.
All right, ready?
Let's go.
All right.
What are you thinking, Paul? Wow, that's a weird flavor.
All right, based on the consistency, the waxy exterior,
yeah.
I'm going to say Mitch McConnell's cheek.
Yeah. Yeah, you know what? I think somebody like ran some marzipan through Mitch McConnell and served us what came out the other end.
What the fuck is marzipan?
It's like that almond, isn't it like almond-based?
Yeah.
Why do you guys know that? Did you learn that on a cruise?
It's a fairly common confection, and yes, they appear at cruise buffets.
I never heard of that confection.
Marzipan?
Never heard of it.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, maybe it'll show up in the vocabulary song.
Yeah, maybe it just will. Here, answer the phone, Adam. Answer the phone.
Hello?
Hey, Adam, it's me, Mike Boom Boom Barfit. Everybody heard of marzipan. What the fuck's the matter with that girl? Everybody heard of marzipan.
Yeah, Mike.
Yeah. Yeah, just wanted to say that. I just want to back you up. Say, am I the 100 caller?
No, you're not. 42.
Oh, fuck. All right, I'll call you back.
No, you don't have to. Okay, so
I never heard of marzipan.
What do you think of the thing you just ate, though?
It's a country that Tony's taking a cruise to.
That's Marzipania, where marzipan
comes
marzipan. From.
Visit
Marzipan. Marzipania, I think, is the
where the virus
national.
Is taking over.
Yeah. What did you think of the...
You got a goddamn death wish, Tony Anita Hall. That's your
I'd
problem.
I'd love to get life.
Wow.
And apparently your brother... I love that. It's a whole family thing.
Yep.
Do you want to? Yeah, I want to. That's beautiful.
This is why we don't do taste tests on this show. Oh, did you like the candy?
No.
You thought it tasted like Mitch McConnell.
Tastes like Mitch McConnell's cheek.
Okay.
In fact, his right cheek.
Well, you might be right. It was actually...
Face cheek.
Yeah. The actual flavor was Momiji Momju.
Oh, of course.
It's a
Fuck. That was right... I knew it started with an M. That's what I knew.
Yeah, you
and
were very close.
Mitch McConnell, Momiji.
Same initials.
Manju.
Yeah. MM.
Yeah. Yeah. By the way, you voters in Kentucky, vote Momiji Manju. Look for it.
Yeah, look for it on the ballot this fall. Yeah. It's a buckwheat maple leaf-shaped rice.
Oh, of course.
That was the flavor
is.
Of Kit Kat we
I
sampled
thinking?
This week.
Buckwheat maple leaf-shaped
rice.
What do you mean maple leaf-shaped?
I don't know. Tony Anita Hall told me.
My maple leaf shape. It was this.
How do you shape rice like maple leaf?
Well, and what does that have to do with it? It was a Kit Kat. It was shaped like a Kit Kat. There was no shape inside.
Oh, it looks like it might be a popular rice pastry or rice cake that's shaped like a maple leaf in Japan.
You
and there's
me
a picture
this
of it on the wrapper.
Written in Japanese, like
yeah, but
I'm
there's a picture of a maple leaf
it.
Shaped cake.
Oh yeah, I see what it says.
Yeah.
Hokaheiwa.
No, Momiji Momju.
Yeah.
No, it's Momiji Manju.
No, I see what it says.
No, you don't. You just. No, you're just making Japanese esque sounds. It's not anything. Now you're pretending to read Japanese very carefully.
Of course I'm reading it. I'm reading it left to right.
Yeah, I'm not.
Do you know why?
No, do you?
Because I'm Japanese Jewish.
We're going to move on.
No, that would be right to left. Excuse me, I take it back. That would be right to left.
All right. Anyway, you can find a complete list of Paula's upcoming performances at paulapoundstone.com. We'll be back with more Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone after this.
How come we mean? Thank you, Tony Neal Hall.
Fun fact, German chocolate cake is named after a man named Sam German and not the country. The country Germany is named after Sam's brother, Max. That's true. Sam German.
How come me, Mom?
Okay, welcome back, Paula. Can I talk to Paula there? Anything you want to report?
I mean, Thumba.
Oh, my God. Japanese Poundstone is the last thing this show needs right now. Do you want to report on the results of our auction? Because we got to go.
We have mini Kit Kats available.
Was that Japanese? That you're doing a hand puppet?
Adamson.
Adamson. Well, at least I'm getting an honorific here.
Many Kit Kats are available.
there are many Kit Kats available.
Do you remember when the Japanese Prime Minister...
Abe?
Thank you. Came to... And they had the cake at Mar-a-Lago and brought the wife and...
Mrs. Abe.
Yes. And Melania took her out. Like Trump and, you know, the men met, the presidents met, and then Melania took poor Mrs. Abe. This is a true thing. I swear I'm not making this up.
Okay, yeah.
She took her to Japanese gardens in Florida.
Wow, really?
Now, wouldn't you think that Mrs. Abe was like, we have those.
Yeah, I would think that would be it.
Wouldn't you think that she felt like, yeah.
But, you know, I bet they...
Why not just take her to a Hello Kitty, for God's sakes?
A Hello Kitty store?
Yeah, exactly.
What is the bug up your butt about Hello Kitty? You really have a problem with Hello Kitty, and I don't get it.
If I were to write a children's book right now, it would be called, What is the Bug Up Your Butt About Hello Kitty? That is so lyrical.
You really have it
I
in
know
for Hello
an
Kitty.
Old woman. Who swallowed a bug up her butt about Hello Kitty. What are you asking me? We have only a few more seconds before the auction is closed.
Yeah, let's change the subject.
Going once for $600,100 from Paul Manafort, going twice.
And let me remind listeners, if you are online and want to bid on this auction, this is your last chance.
And wait a minute.
What?
Scott Franciscus is our high bidder with a new bid of $600,125. Yes! Thank you, Scott Franciscus.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's a lot of money for our show.
Yeah, we could have used that money, Scott.
Yeah. Assuming he's good
fantastic.
For it.
Oh, fantastic. Of course yeah. he's good for it. That's
I don't know
fantastic.
About that. Yeah.
Well, Scott, we're going to... Tony is right now shoving Oscar... the freedom head from the Escape from Alcatraz into an envelope.
From the Alcatraz Escape, not the movie Escape from Alcatraz. That
no,
will be next
from the Alcatraz
auction.
Escape, exactly. Yeah. It's original Oscar head of Oinkin Oscar.
Yeah, Tony, I would put that in a box. It's going to be postage due, and Ed Scott Franciscus won't pay this time.
I don't think that envelope's going to fit it. And Tony, you're taking the eyebrow off. Be careful. This is original. This is a piece of history.
All right, nobodies. Remember, our email address again is nobodylistenstopaulapoundstone@gmail.com.
And you can find me and Adam on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And you can find my remarkably soft tri-polyblend t-shirt with a self-portrait on the left breast and a memorable quote on the back at paulapoundstone.com. The store really is up.
That's our show, everybody. Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone is hosted by Paula Poundstone and yours truly, Adam Felber. Produced by Paula Poundstone, Adam Felber, Bonnie Burns, Kent Lezebnik, Tony Anita Hall, and Land Romo. Technical direction by Jessica Gutierrez. And mixing by Michael Hoagie. Special thanks to tonight's house band, Daniel Grimsland. And thanks to our guest, adjunct professor Justin Arisman. Transcription services for the show provided by TranscribeMe. For your special Paula Poundstone discount, use code Paula Poundstone when placing your order at TranscribeMe.com.
That's our show for tonight. Won't somebody please listen to me?
$600,000, huh?
No, $600,125.
Wow.
Yeah, no, that's... Boy, thank you, Scott. Yeah, the... the store is up, but I gotta tell you, there's a wall in my house that has a hole in it, the shape of Wendell.
It's getting frustrating.
Yeah. Yeah, he just,
ran out.
Yeah, he's
cartoon-like, leaving a silhouette of himself cut out of the wall.
Right through my son's old bedroom/sweatshop.
That's going to happen.
Yeah, yeah, man, I don't know.
It's like my assistant tying all those strings on the grommets.
That's not even real.
Starburns Avenue, a podcast network.